Hello and welcome to this podcast from Blackwell Online. My name is George Miller, and my guest today is journalist and broadcaster Misha Glenny. Misha is well known for his work on the Balkans, first as BBC correspondent, and then as author of The Standard Modern History of the Region, and also more recently for his investigation of organised crime, McMafia, a work which has led on to his latest book, Dark Market, which penetrates the world of cybercrime. Most of us are only dimly aware of that world of hackers and crackers, online frauds and scams, and much of what we know may have been gleaned from films and novels. In fact, the world that Misha Glenny uncovers in Dark Market does often resemble futuristic fiction, in which no one is what they seem, everyone is hiding behind aliases, data trails can suddenly go cold or arrive at dead ends, and the most audacious coups are pulled off by the unlikeliest characters. The book reveals not only the world of the hackers, but also that of the cybercops, a new breed, perhaps less glamorous than the name suggests, who are constantly trying not to fall too many steps behind the criminals. Wisely, Misha Glenny has decided to focus on the personalities and the stories, rather than a computer technology, and perhaps best of all, by the end of the book, he's given us an understanding of what makes these hackers, most of whom are young men, tick. I began by saying that I used to feel reassured if my bank got in touch when they detected an irregular spending pattern on my account. Having read his book and realised the prevalence of cybercrime, I've begun to wonder if I'm not taking false comfort.
Well, it's not a false comfort in as much that the money is compensated to you, and so the stress to you personally is the pain of having to get a new credit card, because that generates extra work for you in terms of perhaps subscriptions that you have on that credit card and things like that. But you're not going to pay out any money for the fact that your credit card has been compromised. The issue is, though, is who is paying for that money? The banks don't pay for the compensation they give to you. They get it off the insurance company. They're insured against this type of risk, low-level cyber criminal risk. And the insurance company, in response to the fact that it has a significant increase in the claims on fraudulent debit and credit cards, puts up the premiums of the insurance policy. The banks, of course, don't wish to pay for the increased premiums, and so what they do is they charge us, their clientele as a whole, by subtly raising their charges. And you will have noticed in the past 3 to 4 years that even though bank interest rates at a historical low, is that charges have been going up pretty steadily every year above and beyond the rate of inflation. And this is one of the reasons why they've been going up. So we're all paying for it. But I wouldn't get too distressed about it. There are many other things that can happen to you as a consequence of online criminality, which are much more distressing than credit or debit card fraud, which remains what we refer to as high volume, low impact.
It comes across very clearly from the book that the hackers, the crackers, are continually trying new things. They're evolving, they're changing, they're adapting. So what was prevalent maybe 4 or 5 years ago has changed as the landscape changes.
That's right. In the first decade of the century, the most popular way of engaging in cybercrime was through the online forums, of which Dark Market was the last and one of the most notorious. These were the sort of supermarkets of crime, where as a criminal you could come and shop for whatever it is you wanted, whether it was a virus or a stolen credit card detail or access to bank accounts or online tutorials. With the downing of Dark Market by the FBI and its associated police forces in Europe, criminals started rethinking. They thought that they were now too exposed to infiltration and penetration by law enforcement and intelligence agencies. And the online forums like Dark Market and Carter Planet and Shadow Crew before it had fulfilled their function. And their primary function, or one of their two primary functions, was to create contacts and networks. So the networks were well established. And by the time Dark Market went down, criminals had also got a fairly good idea of who was trustworthy and who was not trustworthy. And so what's happened is they've gone down into a deeper underground since then. Often on, you have a series of bilateral relations between criminals as opposed to multilateral relations. The other thing that's happened as a consequence is you've got a greater division of labour within online crime, and that's...
You've got sort of specialisation.
You do have specialisation, and it's partly because you're seeing also a migration of traditional organised crime groups over to cyber, because they realise that it's relatively low risk and the returns are relatively high. And that specialisation is you will have someone who is orchestrating a particular type of crime. You will have somebody who is commissioned to write a particular type of virus, which has certain properties that you require. You will then have somebody who is... So what viruses very often do is they enslave computers that they infect, which come under the jurisdiction of a command and control computer. And a command and control computer can have under its influence, you know, over 100,000 computers. That's both a significant number, and it's not a big deal for a single computer to control. So you will get... You'll have somebody who writes the virus that will create that so-called botnet of enslaved computers, and then you'll have what's called a bot herder. And the bot herder is the guy who sort of organizes the botnet, as it were. Then you will have somebody who actually launches the attack, identifies the target, and all of these people have very tenuous links with each other. So in fact, you've got a very big conspiracy, but it's been operating on a sort of virtual cell basis, rather in the way that terrorist organizations or insurgent organizations, particularly after the Second World War, created themselves in order to ensure that if one element of the cell structure is taken out by law enforcement, it doesn't actually lead to a collapse of the organization as a whole. So that's something that this has all happened in the wake of dark market's collapse.
And in the heyday of dark market, which was in the middle of the last decade, if I had been a hacker with criminal intent, how would I have actually gained access to this circle?
You would have had to, first of all, built up your reputation as a persistent and willing and keen online criminal. That means that you will have had to have showed your mettle by coming up with stolen credit card details or stolen bank account details and so on. And it would have been... your work would have been reviewed. So these were quite structured operations, all of them, from the inaugural one, Carta Planet, which was founded in Odessa in 2001 onwards, had their inner circle, which were known as the administrators. And they would usually have four or five administrators. And these people would decide on whether people could come into the forum or not, whether they would be excluded, whether they would be put on notice that they were being watched, or whether it was decided that they were possible law enforcement and therefore needed to be thrown out, and so on and so forth. So these people were seen by most of the members as immensely influential and powerful. In fact, of course, for them it was a hell of a lot of work. It was really grindingly tedious. And on the whole, those administrative people tended not to be... there were one or two important exceptions, tended not to be the ones who made lots of money. The ones who made lots of money were much less obviously present on the forum, because they understood that the more present they were, the more interest they would attract from those law enforcement who everybody knew had, to a greater or lesser extent, infiltrated the forums. And just as in our own lives we have to make the assumption that our computers have been compromised, so it was that criminals on the forum made the assumption that they were being monitored by the FBI, the US Secret Service, or whoever.
So you mentioned the administrators as these people who've got lots of power and knowledge in the structure and can free someone out or admit them, but they weren't making lots of money. So what was the motivation for them? What was making them do it?
On the whole, it was community, a commitment to community, I think. It's just a rather peculiar community. But definitely somebody like Renukanth Gilzi, who is one of the characters in Dark Market. This for him was his life, really. I mean, the rest of his life was spent with some rather sort of tawdry petty criminals from the Tamil-speaking community in North London, or occasionally doing shifts at Pizza Express. Sorry, that's unfair on Pizza Express. It was Pizza Hut. But otherwise, he would spend hours and hours doing this. And Gilsey was a big name on the carding forum. He was seen as a really big player by the truly sophisticated criminals. He was seen as something of a lightweight. But for most of the people involved, he was a major player and one of the administrators of Dark Market. And that's what he wanted, was his reputation. And he, in interviews, he repeatedly told me, he said, this is all about your reputation. It's essentially a game, and it's about showing yourself to be one of the most successful and competent players on the criminal net.
It's also about creating a persona, isn't it? And the line between fantasy and reality often seems quite tenuous with some of the characters that you talk about. There's one particular Turkish character whose whole testimony is, you know, it seems to be embroidered with fantasy. And there's a moment where Iceman, one of the leading players, comes out with a kind of world-dominating statement that just sounds like a comic book villain.
I know it does sound like a comic book villain. The irony about Iceman is that when he was coming out with those statements as Iceman, he came across as a purist, as somebody who personally would never get involved in crime, and that he felt it too beneath him to be engaged in it. He had two other persona who were active credit card criminals, who were the same person, but whose online presence was very different from Iceman. And that actually speaks again to this extraordinary compartmentalization ability of these types of hackers, which is really very, very striking. They can talk about their other personalities and about themselves as though they're talking about somebody else in the third person, not just talking about themselves in the third person, but talking about a separate identity, but one, of course, with which they're intimately acquainted. You know, these are people with really complicated psychology, in my experience, some more so than others. I mean, Iceman was an extreme case. But some of the Russians are of a similar ilk, and certainly some of the Turks. And when it came to the one you mentioned, young Mert, you know, I think a good shrink would have a lifetime's work in front of him with Mert, it's extraordinary, this interweaving of fantasy and reality. And he's also, as a character, Mert, he's utterly charming and mesmeric. It was... You know, and part of me was really disappointed that half of what he told me was complete bullshit. The problem was, this is that half of it was verifiable, and it's this sort of, you know, where does it begin and end? You can't tell. And I mean, my feeling is that, come under some criticism, perhaps, because the language was a little exaggerated about this, but my feeling is that the internet encourages and lends itself to deception and duplicity, and this, you know, not necessarily in a bad way, but in the way that people are permanently reinventing themselves on the web. And I think some of the people who've criticized me about that speculation that I engage in the book are themselves somehow sort of completely committed to the internet as a sort of definable technological tool, and that they see it within the parameters of the physics behind the technology. And personally, I think it's just a little bit, you know, that's a little bit unimaginative.
I mean, given all you've said, Misha, about dealing with characters who themselves deal with avatars, whose very business is deception and the complexity of the technology, how did you begin to put this story together? I mean, you describe it as one of the most enervating experiences of your career. Yeah. So how did you tackle it?
Because, I had to make it interesting. And to make it interesting, you have to avoid talking about computers wherever possible. And again, some of the tech people have criticized me for when I say things like this, saying that, you know, everyone's interested in computers these days. And I simply don't think that's true. I think everyone's interested in using computers, and everyone happens to be, whether they know it or not, very dependent upon computers. But they still find the subject of computers and computer technology and computer security profoundly boring. So I had to find a way of making it interesting, and that's when I hit upon the idea of not writing about computers wherever possible. but writing about the characters behind the computers. But then I had to, I mean, Dark Market gave it a certain structure because there was a beginning, a middle, and end to Dark Market. In some areas, in some parts of it, I had a surfeit of material. In some areas, even after exhaustive researches, and I'm still rather sort of rather obsessively searching for a large archive of Dark Market to which I was never, to which I never gained access, but I'm slowly getting there. And just for my own curiosity, I want to fill in some of the gaps. But so I had to balance the areas where I knew too much and the areas where I knew too little. And then say to myself, right, you've got to have a narrative structure that is convincing. That is the most important thing of all. And once I decided that, I found it easier to write. But the problem is, because this is non-fiction, and this is a real problem if you write non-fiction, is if things don't sort of square up into a nice, neat ending, as they don't in Dark Market, you can't make it up. Which, of course, in fiction you can do. So that's that was a touch upsetting, but I think I got round it more or less.
I mean, it does have some of the characteristics of fiction, and it must have been tempting. I mean, you had a character called Max Vision, and he just sounds like he stepped out of the pages of William Gibson, doesn't he?
Well, he is. Max Vision is actually Iceman, right. And he is from William Gibson. In fact, you know, I mean, some of the Russians are sort of William Gibson on steroids. It's really, really interesting, including their links with, you know, military intelligence and stuff like that. I mean, they're fabulous characters. They really are. But I'll be honest with you, I became quite fond of both the criminals and the police involved. I mean, you know, this is... The other thing is that to get into a story like this, you have to engage with the people on a quite intimate level, you know, and you've got to realise the fact that there will be an element, and there is an element of Stockholm Syndrome about some of the relationships I have with the people involved, you know, on their part rather than on my part. Of course, once they get over the fact that they're talking to somebody who's going to tell their story, i.e. it's a journalist, they really start to get into it. They become, some of them, are very, very free with the information they gave.
We've talked a fair bit about the cyber criminals. We haven't talked so much about the cyber cops. And this really is a fairly recent job description, isn't it? What kind of people are attracted to this line of policing?
Well, on the whole, they tended to come from other areas of the police, but some are specialised, some are not. I mean, the key guy in Dark Market, the FBI undercover agent, was essentially, he worked in sales before, and what he was good at was social engineering, which is, you know, persuading people that they're actually dealing with somebody they aren't dealing with, i.e. a policeman, but in fact they thought they were dealing with a criminal. Of course, he had an entire backup team, so he pretended to be technologically competent. I mean, he's not incompetent technologically, but he was running the server for a while, and so he needed to have people who he could call on straight away saying, what the hell does this mean? You know, when he's being asked a question by one of his fellow administrators. So they have resources, in a sense. So when you see one cop, the avatar of who happens to be a cop, even if you don't know he's a cop, you're dealing with about five or six people there. The cyber policeman who I work with in Turkey, Bilal Shen, who's a great guy, really nice guy, actually. I like Bilal a lot. Very thoughtful. Worked his way up through the ranks of officer training school, but had always been obsessed by computers and was a self-didact and had taken himself off to a university and after his police college and written a PhD on cybercrime and its relationship with the Turkish state, which was absolutely fascinating. So Bilal persuaded, with a friend of his, persuaded the Interior Ministry to set up an entirely new division, admittedly a very sort of small and under-resourced division, which he heads up, which is the cyber division. So he was very much, you know, within a rather lumbering state bureaucracy that the Turkish state bureaucracy is, he was very much a self-starter. One of the advantages in this early stage of people engaged in tracking cyber criminality is that no one else in their departments understand what they're doing. And that actually gives them quite a lot of leeway. Now, of course, they're seeing that government procurement is beginning to open up the pockets significantly for cyber stuff. And so you're seeing competition between agencies. And really, that's one of the stories about dark market, is the competition between the FBI and the Secret Service for trying to stake a claim as the lead cyber agency. Because if you're the lead cyber agency, you get lead cyber cash from the government. And so it's becoming a rather sort of competitive world, mixed in with the military-industrial complex surrounding cyber, which is, you know, the big companies from Symantec and McAfee on the antivirus and software and consultancy side, over to Lockheed Martin, Raytheon and Northrop Grumman on the arms side, where they, of course, are pumping up the cyber threat as much as possible because of the cash they can get out of governments for what are extremely expensive digital solutions to these problems, which don't always work.
One of the things that I took from your book is that we need to think much more about why the hackers do what they do, as opposed to the how. At the moment, we're a bit fixated on the how and stopping that, but actually thinking about what is motivating them and whether the skills they have can be redeployed. Because, as we said earlier, it's not essentially about making them millionaires. There's a different satisfaction they're getting from it.
Yeah, and people hack for different reasons, and people have different types of hacking abilities. What I was talking about just now about governments preferring to spend money on expensive digital solutions, they're spending at the moment, the Western world is spending something in the region of $110 billion a year on these expensive digital solutions, and they're putting no money into research about the hackers. And this has got to stop from a rational point of view. I think there are real opportunities here for university departments around the place to start getting engaged in this sort of thing. There's a wonderful little organization called the Hackers Profiling Project in Turin in Italy, which is associated with the UN's criminal justice research arm, UNICRI, which deserves to have more money put into it, because they're uncovering all sorts of things through good empirical statistical research about where hackers come from, what their motivation is, and so on and so forth. At the moment, what we're doing is we're imposing draconian responses to hackers, and we aren't differentiating between whether they're criminal hackers, whether they're motivated by politics like Anonymous, Lulzsec, freedom of speech like WikiLeaks, and so on and so forth. And I think these people are different characters. They may share some behavioral traits, but I think their motivation separates them out, and it would be very valuable for us to understand their motivation. What makes them at a young age decide to turn to crime, or a sort of ideologically, idealistically based program of hacking? And at the moment, we're not really paying attention to that at all.
I mean, one thing we haven't mentioned so far is that 95% of them are male. Mm. And you related that very interestingly to Simon Baron Cohen's work on systematizing mindsets versus empathizing mindsets.
You know, it's very interesting that, because of course Simon Baron Cohen's work is contested, and I was picked up on this in the review in The Guardian about the fact that I had, you know, there was that this was contested. I you know, I've read his stuff very closely. I've read the critiques of it, and it seems to me that he is largely, using my analytical faculties, he's largely convincing. And it certainly squares up with what I learned interviewing hackers, that the, you know, that the systemizing and the empathizing abilities undoubtedly conform to the patterns that he had identified amongst people with various forms of spectrum disorder. So, you know, I will continue looking at that as a valuable tool for trying to understand hackers, where they're coming from, and more to the point, where they're going.
Well, let me ask you finally, Misha, then, where do you think hacking is going? It's 3 years since Dark Market came down. The landscape has changed again. What do you... I mean, China is only, I suppose, beginning to express itself in terms of cybercrime. So what do you see the future holding?
China's been expressing itself in terms of cybercrime for a little while now, but it's certainly true that China is engaged in large-scale industrial espionage in particular, but also espionage against governments through the internet. It's easy to do. Lots of people are vulnerable. You can hack into them. You can steal their secrets. There's nothing you can do about that. China, however, has a genuine interest in seeing the stability of the internet. It likes to regulate its own internet. That's why it's always terribly keen when people like David Cameron suggest in the wake of the riots that Twitter and BlackBerry messaging systems should be closed down. The Chinese applauded this ferociously and said, this is what we've been trying to tell you all along, so they can close down their social media networking systems. You're seeing, I think, the fragmentation of the internet into fairly highly regulated intranets defined by national territory. I think states have just woken up to the fact that the internet is far too powerful a tool to be left in the hands of ordinary citizens. And that's really what's happening. The consequence of this, and I think it might be counterproductive, is the increasing criminalization of any hacking activity in the Western world. Hacking activity in China and Russia is more nuanced in as much that they allow it to go on, provided it's not directed against their own national internets, and it's directed against outside, and they then use those people for purposes of national security quite often. We are criminalizing hackers very quickly, particularly in the United States, and I think we might need to introduce a more nuanced approach to this, because hackers have a tendency to come and bite you on the bum if you provoke them too much, and I think we are provoking them a lot at the moment.
Misha Glennie. Dark Market, Cyber Thieves, Cyber Cops, and You is out now in hardback. You'll find it, plus several million other titles, at blackwell.co.uk. Do check out Misha's other books while you're there, especially The Balkans, 1804 to 1999, and McMafia, Seriously Organized Crime. On the Blackwell site, you'll also find a podcast archive with over 150 author interviews by clicking on the podcast tab on the home page. That's all for this edition of the Blackwell Online podcast, but I'll hope you'll join me again soon for another program. Until then, thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.